Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Conspiracy Theory by John G. Hartness. Narrated by James Anderson Foster. 1.
I stood on my balcony, Irish coffee in my hands, looking at the lightening sky. My apartment faced south, so I never had the sun streaming directly in, especially not first thing in the morning. But on the rare occasions that I wanted to watch the sunrise, I missed it a little. I sipped at my coffee and grimaced. I'd stood there long enough for it to get cold, or lukewarm, rather, since there's not a drink in the world that'll go from hot to cold when left unattended in June in North Carolina, no matter what time of day or night. Still, lukewarm Irish coffee just feels like you're making excuses to drink and should sack the fuck up and take a drink. So that's what I did. I poured the coffee out, safe in the knowledge that if I doused anyone on the ground 20 floors below me, that at least they wouldn't be scalded in addition to wet. There was a bottle of Dead Rabbit whiskey on a table behind me, and I turned to fill my cup, stopping at the sight of a woman standing there. It wasn't so much that a woman was standing on my balcony at sunrise that surprised me. I do, after all, live with a woman. But I don't live with this woman, and that was the source of my raised eyebrow. "Morning, Cassie," I said to the diminutive black woman standing on my balcony in a white fuzzy robe that looked like it had been stolen from an expensive hotel. Although in her gown and bedroom slippers, Cassandra Schuyler Harrison, 75 years old and razor-tongued, her white hair pulled back in a neat bun, looked like she was there to give me a lecture on the evils of drink, I knew better. "Want some? You know where the cups are." I poured a healthy slug of whiskey into my mug and turned back to the rail, hoping Cassie would get the hint.
"I didn't come here to drink, Quincy," she said, standing next to me at the railing.
I didn't ask. I didn't want to know why she was here. I knew why she was here, and I didn't want to know why she was here.
"Why are you here, then? It's too early for guessing games."
"You still not sleeping?
I just wanted to come up and see the sunrise. Is that so strange?" Cassie laughed, a sharp, irony-tinged laugh that both made me smile and warned me what was coming next.
"Boy, the only person I know who hates being up at dawn more than you is your Uncle Luke, and he catches fire if he sees the sun. Don't lie to old ladies, Harker. It ain't polite."
I opened my mouth to say something snarky and probably profane and very much Quincy Harker, but I didn't. I didn't say anything for a long moment. I just stood there, my elbows resting on the safety railing around the balcony, feeling the chilly metal spread cold up and down my bare forearms. I needed to get my tattoos redone. I didn't remember draining the power I stored there, but it probably happened sometime during my recent torture at the hands of Josef Mengele. Being electrocuted by Nazis that are supposed to be dead tends to take it out of a person. There was a second where it almost came all pouring out of me, just like cold coffee poured from a balcony. But then I got hold of myself and deflected like a reasonable person. "What are you doing up at this ungodly hour, Cassie? I'm sure Luke had you up until the wee hours." Serving as my uncle's current Renfield had some drawbacks, and the bizarre schedule was just one of them. Dealing with working for the world's most famous vampire was another. She laughed again. I noticed we laughed more with her around. She was something, I thought, this wiry old woman. Like a steel spring found in a junkyard. A coat of rust on her, maybe, but she could snap back from just about anything.
"I'm old, boy. Real people old, not this live-forever bullshit kind of old like you and Lucas. I'll be dead soon. Get plenty of sleep then. Besides, when you get to be my age, you've got to get up every 2 or 3 hours to pee anyway. After the second time, you know somebody's going to be firing up a vacuum cleaner or some other silliness next door soon enough, so you might as well just stay up." I chuckled.
"Nice robe." She beamed, the Cassie kind of smile that illuminated the balcony more than the off-axis sunrise.
"Thank you, Quincy. Your friend Gabriella brought it back for me from an assignment the council sent her on a few months back.
Well, that answered that. The robe was most definitely stolen. Gabby Van Helsing was a lot of things, most of them complicated, but an inveterate stealer of nice hotel towels and bathrobes was absolutely one of those things. I'd overheard Luke yelling at her over the phone more than once about charges that showed up on his credit card for things she swiped. Part of me thought she was trying to goad Luke into coming after her, just so she could keep the old family tradition of Dracula staking alive. No matter how many times I told her that her great-grandfather Abraham had ended up good friends with Luke by his death, there was always a little glint in her eyes when she looked at him, like Ahab taking note of a whale spout off his starboard bow.
"You want to tell me about them?"
Cassandra pulled one of the heavy metal chairs away from the patio table with a loud scrape. I winced a little, but felt along our mental link that Bex was still sound asleep inside.
"She can sleep through a hurricane, boy. I ain't going to wake that child up moving a chair. Now, sit down and tell Aunt Cassie about your bad dreams."
She patted the arm of the chair to her left. I sprawled out in the chair, grateful for her choice of seats. This let us both look out over the edge of the balcony, pretending to watch the sun come up over the city, when really I just didn't want to look her in the eye. "You know, I'm not much of one for talking about my feelings," I said.
"I am well aware."
The line of her mouth was flat, but I could hear the tiniest bit of smirk in her words.
"Except for anger, you have no problem expressing that fluidly and creatively.
Rage swearing gives me an excuse to practice the more colorful parts of all the languages I speak," I replied.
"How many is that, by the way?"
I thought for a few seconds. "I'm pretty conversational in all the romance languages, Spanish, French, Italian, Portuguese, because I learned Latin young and still use it. My German is good enough to get me by if the other person is patient. I can manage to order food and find a bathroom in Mandarin, Korean, and Tagalog, and I curse fluently in Hebrew, Arabic, Turkish, Persian, and Hopi. I guess with a week or two of practice, my Khmer would probably come back, but that's one I'd rather not visit. Cambodia wasn't good for me, or for a lot of people."
"That's a lot of languages."
"I've lived a lot of places, and I don't like tourist food."
"You left out Enochian and any of the divine languages."
"Humans can't really speak Enochian. We can't hear the right range of sounds to get the pronunciation right, or at least that's what I've been told, and I'm nowhere near fluent in it. I can recognize it, but I have to translate it most of the time. I have a few chains of symbols memorized, mostly for bindings, but anything past that, I'm going to need a few hours, a book, and 4 ibuprofen. Looking at that shit too long makes my head hurt."
"So, what are you dreaming about?"
And there's Cassie. She would have made a great interrogator. Get the subject talking about something, anything, really, as long as they're talking, and then once you got their defenses down, you hit them with the real question. I leaned my head back and stared at the sky for a good half a minute, then straightened up and finished my whiskey. I reached for the bottle, but an age-mottled hand slid it away from me.
"Talk, Quincy. I don't need you drunk before the sun's up good."
"I might need me drunk to talk about it," I grumbled, but leaned back in my chair. I didn't look at her. I did that thing where you pretend that there's no one else in the room, or in this case, on the balcony, and you just talk like nobody can hear you. It never works, but sometimes it can get me out of my own way. "It's the fucking dreams, Cass. I'm pretty much okay while I'm awake, as okay as I get at least. But when I dream, you go back there," she finished. "No, not even that. If I just went back to being in the moment, I could handle that. I was out of my fucking mind with rage. Everything was red, everything was anger, everything was pain, and I just wanted to burn the world down and laugh while I watched. But I mean, fuck, that's the normal part of it, right? I thought Bex was dead. I thought the woman I love more than anyone I've ever known, was gone. Forever. And I knew I'd never see her again. I know what happens after we die, and I sure as fuck know what's going to happen to me. That means there is less than zero chance of me ever seeing Rebecca again after we're dead and gone. Lucifer's made it clear as glass that he's got big fucking plans for me, and they involve my guts and a spinning wheel and making a new blankie out of Harker intestines every fucking day for the first millennia he's got his hands on me, and then he plans to get fucking creative. So, rage? Rage makes sense. Losing myself completely in the moment makes sense. Nobody in their right mind could keep their shit together with all that on them. No, it's not the fury that scares me. I don't have nightmares about losing control again. I stopped talking. That torrent of words was more than I'd spoken to anyone about what had happened a month ago when I thought Flynn was dead, and it didn't feel good getting it out. Not like everyone said it should, no. I felt raw and scraped from the inside, like I'd puked up battery acid and it scarred me from my trachea to my soul. I was breathing heavy and I felt the sweat making the hairs on the back of my neck stick to the skin. "Then what do you dream of, Quincy?" Cassie's voice was soft, easy, like the surface of a pond on a spring morning. It calmed me. Let me step it back down enough to speak again. In my dreams, I'm not out of control, Cass. In my dreams, I do all of those horrible things to Mangala and his goons, and I'm there for all of it. I torture that guard, I burn him, I freeze him, and I electrocute him all at the same time, and I watch myself do it. Not from outside myself, like you sometimes do in dreams, where you're observing yourself but not a part of it, no. I'm there. I feel Mangala's skin beneath my fingertips. I feel the resistance as I pull his arms off. Feel the skin tear. Hear the bones crack. Feel the splatter of blood on my face. I'm not afraid of losing control. I'm afraid of doing something like that again and knowing exactly what I'm doing. She took in a breath, but I held up one finger. Yes, I could. I appreciate you wanting to tell me I couldn't do that, but we both know it's bullshit. I am perfectly capable of being that monster, and every night when I close my eyes, I am. That's why I can't fucking sleep, Cassandra. Because when I'm asleep, I can't lie to myself about being the goddamned hero anymore. I stood up, leaned over the table to the whiskey bottle, drained the last few ounces of warm liquid into my throat, and walked inside to take a shower and try to scald or drown my truth for a few minutes, at least. 2. Bex was waiting for me when I got out of the shower, sitting cross-legged in the middle of the bed, hair pulled back in a messy ponytail, a CMPD t-shirt on, and her legs still under the covers. I leaned over, kissed her, and rubbed my hair dry as I pulled clothes out of the dresser. One thing about Luke getting a new Renfield, my laundry got done a lot more regularly. It wasn't part of Cassie's job to clean up after me, but since our apartment was the de facto headquarters of what existed of the Shadow Council nowadays, she just kinda absorbed our place into her cleaning routine. I wasn't going to complain if it kept me in clean underpants.
"Nice ass, Harker,"
Beck said, and I could hear the smile in her voice. I thought again how much I loved that woman and felt a rush of warmth over the mental link we shared. "Thanks, babe. You're not so bad yourself."
"How would you know? I'm covered up."
"You weren't when I got up this morning," I said. "I might own up to checking you out while you sleep sometimes."
"That would be creepy if we weren't engaged."
She wrinkled her forehead.
"Might still be. I'll get back to you on that. Oh, and I'm calling bullshit, by the way."
I turned to face her and could see from the look on her face that all the joking was over. She had her serious face on, which either meant we were going to have a discussion, or she was going to shoot me. And since her service pistol was behind me on the dresser, I was safe from getting shot for the moment. "I might need you to be a little more specific, darling," I said. "Exactly what are you calling bullshit on this time? There are a lot of choices."
"She's probably calling bullshit on the word morning, Harker,"
Glory said, walking in from the living room with two cups of coffee in her hands. She passed one to Flynn and sat on the edge of the bed next to her. They made almost perfect mirror images.
Glory's blonde hair contrasting with Beck's dark curly ponytail, Glory's fair skin and blue eyes against Flynn's dark brown skin and brown eyes, Glory's scowl beside the concerned look on Beck's face. "What is this?" I asked. "An intervention?"
"Exactly," Glory said. "And put some pants on, you're distracting Rebecca."
Bex's cheeks darkened ever so slightly, but I felt the flush in her mind, so I pulled jeans on over my boxer briefs and slipped on the black Yellow Rock Investigations t-shirt I'd pulled out of the drawer. "Okay, I'm all covered up. Now, what exactly are you intervening about? I quit doing good drugs a long time before I met either of you, and I don't drink that much." That was 100% bullshit, but it would be pretty accurate if I said I didn't drink that much for me. It takes a lot to get me drunk, so while I consumed enough booze most nights to kill three ordinary men, it barely was enough to get me to sleep for a few hours.
"You don't drink that little either, Harker," came a new voice.
I turned to see Kaya Pravesh standing in my doorway, her arms folded across her chest. "Oh, for fuck's sake," I exclaimed. "You too? Did you get a nice show out of it, Pravesh?"
"You're not my type, Harker," she said. "But you're right," she said to Glory. "He does have a nice butt." "For a human, he's well-shaped," my guardian angel replied.
"If you're done objectifying me, can we move this to the den where we can all sit down without reenacting a bad scene from a mediocre sitcom?" I didn't wait to see if they followed me, just shooed Pravesh in front of me and walked into the apartment's living room. We took out the dividing wall between the den and the dining area as soon as we decided to centralize our operations in my building. That also coincided with Luke's house getting blown to toothpicks, so he lived next door. The entire floor was our people, with a couple of spare furnished apartments in case we needed some place for allies to crash. It had come in handy when we were operating Uncle Quincy's home for wayward archangels the better part of a year ago. I grabbed an armchair and dragged it over in front of the fireplace, at the end of the two sofas that faced each other across a large glass coffee table I didn't remember buying. I didn't say anything when I noticed new furniture, though. Part of the cost of running away for half a year was you didn't get to say a goddamn thing about what the people you left behind did with your living room. Bex sat closest to me, and Glory took a spot across from her, leaving Pravesh to take one of the far seats on the couch nearest the balcony. "Are we waiting for somebody else, or is this all?" I asked, not doing a good job of keeping the snark out of my voice. I knew they were worried about me. Hell, I was worried about me. But talking about my feelings had never been useful to me. Explosions and bloodshed, yes, but talking, not so much.
"No, this is everyone," Pravesh said. "Frankly, I am only here as a favor to Detective Flynn. I am only interested in your psychological well-being as it pertains to your ability to carry out our missions to dismantle Demon and purge any rogue personnel from within Homeland Security."
She was a cold-blooded one, our Kaya. Literally, too, she was a Lamia, one of a race of all-female human-snake hybrids thought to be extinct. I'd read in the Council's archives about one that operated in the United States in the early part of the 20th century, but she'd been thought to be the last. Pravesh only disclosed her paranormal nature when she got shot in the head and had to basically shed her human form. She was also the regional director for the Department of Homeland Security's Paranormal Division, and a pretty good shot. She and I were never gonna be friends, but there was a growing level of mutual respect between us. I respected her forthright nature, and she respected the sheer amount of devastation I could wreak in a very short time.
"Good to know you're consistent, Director," I said. "And you too?"
I looked between Glory and my fiancé, waiting for one of them to start trying to fix whatever they thought was broken.
"You're fucked up, Harker," Glory said.
"I'm pretty sure I will never get used to my guardian angel dropping F-bombs like commas, but she spent some time stuck as a human, and it fundamentally changed her. She had her wings back and all her angelic powers, but I'm not completely certain she was still divine. I wasn't going to tell her that, though."
"Succinct, but correct," Pravesh said. "We're worried about you," Bex said.
She glanced at Pravesh and shrugged. Well, most of us are, anyway. You haven't slept through the night since you got home from Memphis, and I'm pretty sure it's not the lack of bar funk and blues music that's keeping you awake. Talk to us. Shit, talk to me, if nothing else. I hate this as much as you do, she whispered to me mentally, but you won't sit still long enough for me to talk to you about it, so I had to call in reinforcements.
I sighed and leaned forward, putting my elbows on my knees and bending forward until my fingers tangled in my messy hair. I'm not much for the talk-it-out stuff, but here goes. I died. I held up a finger as they all started to speak. Not metaphorically. When the Medusa turned me to stone, she didn't encase me in stone. She turned me to stone. I was dead. Way dead. Real dead. I saw Lucifer again, and he was way too happy to see me. I cashed in my favor with Uriel and got back, but that was a one-time-only offer. Then I got kidnapped by a psycho-Nazi, tortured to within an inch of my life, fought my uncle almost to the death, and then thought the woman I love was murdered. I lost my shit. I went full dark, no stars on those motherfuckers, and part of me wasn't just awake for it. He was having a really good time.
You were traumatized, Harker, Glory said. It was worse than when Anna died, and your fugue state when that happened is the kind of stuff they use to train guardians about what can go wrong with powerful charges like you.
That's just it, Glory, I said, locking eyes with her. It wasn't anything like when Anna died, because back then, there was nothing of me left. This time, I was still aware. A big part of me knew what I was doing, and that part was having a damn good time. I'd already decided I was in hell, and if I was going to walk through the Valley of the Shadow of Death, I was going to be the baddest motherfucker in the valley.
But you came back, Flynn said. You came back, and we saved Luke, and I wasn't dead.
I was, Pravesh said, but I got better. It happens.
Fucking Lamier. I did, I said. But not all the way, or maybe I'm back, but I brought something nasty back out of the dark places of my soul with me, because I can feel it lurking there, this part of me that revels in the slaughter and the blood and the pain. He's sitting there waiting for it to all go sideways again, because he wants to watch the world burn, and he knows if he just lets me go blindly after Shaw and her cronies that I'll eventually light the match.
That's the demon talking, Glory said.
I opened my mouth, and it was her turn to hold up a finger for silence.
Trust me, I can't tell you everything I know about Skifrax, the demon that lives inside Luke, and has a derivative in you, but I can tell you that those thoughts aren't actually a part of you. They're infernal in origin, and while they're a part of you, they're not necessarily a bad thing. No, hear me out.
This time the finger went toward Bex, and she obediently closed her mouth.
Harker's had this thing inside him his entire life, and it's been gaining strength for over a century. But it's always remained hidden, at least until now.
She turned back to me.
The past few years have certainly been the most stressful you've lived through, but instead of giving in to the demon's control, you've gotten stronger. You're actually a better person than you were when we met, Harker.
Glory paused and gave me a little smirk.
I take no small amount of credit for that, by the way. The truth is, the shard of Skifrax that lives in you has grown in power too, but you keep him in check, Harker. You haven't gone on some rampage and stormed the gates of heaven with a horde of demons at your back, or burned entire continents to the dirt. You haven't even engaged in mass murder.
Staggering property damage, yes. Mass murder, no.
That Pravesh, always putting the best light on things.
So, yeah, it's been a rough year, a rough couple of years, and the next few months look like they might get worse before it gets better. But you've gotten stronger the more fucked up things have gotten, and you've got people around you to bring you back down to earth if you start to slip, like Bex did in that warehouse.
Glory and my fiancée shared a warm look, but I read as much relief in Glory's posture as anything. That's when it clicked for me.
"Holy fucking shit," I said. Everyone turned to look at me, and when I locked eyes with Glory, she looked like something tasted really bad, and I knew I was right. "You're my guardian, but you're not here to guard me, are you?" Flynn's head whipped back and forth between me and Glory.
"What the actual fuck are you talking about, Harker?"
"Answer me, Glory," I said. My voice was low and level, and despite the emotions roiling within me, I managed to keep a lid on everything going on inside me. A lot of assumptions were about to get flipped on their head, and I wasn't sure who was going to be standing when the dust cleared from the bomb I was about to drop.
"No, that's right. You're my assignment, but guarding you is only a part of the job."
Glory met my eyes, and for the first time in the decade we'd been together, I saw a hint of the cold distance I'd always seen in every divine creature I'd ever encountered. "What's the job, Glory?" I asked. "They deserve to know the truth. She deserves to know." The angel on my couch sat in silence for a long time, then she looked at Flynn.
"I'm sorry."
She turned back to me.
"I do care about you, you know."
It wasn't a question. It also wasn't a lie, but it wasn't the whole truth either. "I know. Now tell her." Glory took a deep breath, then let it out slow and looked Rebecca in the eye.
"I'm Harker's guardian, and I'm tasked with keeping him alive and safe. But he's right. That's not the whole job. It's not even the main job. My primary task is guarding the world from Harker. He is unique in human history. A human born with a shred of demon essence, but not a cambion. There has never been anything like him before, and heaven doesn't know what would happen if he ever completely lost control or embraced the demon inside himself."
"I don't understand,"
Bex said, but I could see the lie written in her eyes, her jaw, the set of her shoulders. Every inch of her screamed that she was full of shit, but really, really wanted to be telling the truth.
"I'm here to make sure that if Harker ever goes dark, that the damage to the world is kept to a minimum. I'm here to keep the loss of innocent life as low as possible."
"She's not here to keep me alive, babe," I said. "She's here to kill me."
3.
That revelation went over about as well as you'd expect, and after some threats and a wealth of profanity, including some words I didn't even know my fiancé knew, she threw her coffee cup at Glory's head and stormed off into the bedroom to get ready for work. Pravesh had slipped out of the room as the first epithets were hurled, so that left me and Glory sitting in the living room together in the uneasy silence to end all uneasy silences. "So," I started, but ran out of words after that.
"Yeah."
"That's a thing?"
"Oh, yeah. It's totally a thing."
"What are we going to do about it?" I asked. Glory sat silent for a long time. I watched her think, mulling over for the first time the level of power wrapped in the guise of a gorgeous blonde woman. She was, to put it mildly, built like a brick shithouse with a cover girl face and long curls that always managed to look both messy and perfectly arranged. She was one of the most beautiful women I'd ever seen, and I wondered now if she chose that form to hide the threat she presented. We sat in silence long enough for the sun to rise past the level of my floor-to-ceiling windows, so I got up to open the blinds. As long as I'm pretty sure nobody's going to come crashing through the glass, I try to keep them open as much as I can. I paid a lot for the view, might as well enjoy it. Glory took a deep breath as I walked back over and sat in the chair again.
"I don't really know, Harker," she admitted. "Like I said, you're unique. There's never been anyone or anything quite like you. Normal rules don't apply."
"What are the normal rules?" I asked.
"Normally, we never interact directly with our charges. Normally, they only believe we're real if they're already religious, and we just keep them safe. That was never going to work with you. Aside from your raw power, you already knew too much for me to stay hidden, so..."
"So you let me see you,"
I finished. Yeah.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?